Come on, guy. You can't say you didn't see this coming.
What?
What did you think these were?
Kisses? Seven little kisses?
Seven deadly X's. X's. X's.
Oh, why does everything have to be so complicated?
If you want something bad, you have to fight for it. Step up your game, Scott. Break out the L word.
Lesbian?
The other L word.
Lesbians?
It's love, Scott. I wasn't trying to trick you. Hey, buddy, look. If she really is the girl of your dreams, then you have to let her know. You have to overcome any and all obstacles that lie in your path. You can do it. Be with her. It's your destiny. Plus, I need you to move out.
Don't stop me,
'cause I'm having a good time. Having a good time.
I'm a shooting star, leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car.
And welcome to the Adrenaline Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is Douglas.
And this is Damien. And we are the official podcast of G-Man Reviews, right? I know that Roger Ebert has been, you know, making jokes. He thinks this is funny, you know, right? Leeching off of my friend's hard work for his bootleg ass podcast. But we are the only official podcast of G-Man Reviews.
What right? podcast is Roger Ebert on? No.
You don't know that one, Andrew? Just don't even...
He has the name, the movie podcast.
Yeah.
Oh. It's on our site, on our website.
Okay, so in true Andrew fashion, I shall say, anyway... we should probably talk about what we've been watching, and...
Do we have to?
Yes, we have to. And I guess I'll start first. This week was the first week of Corporate Douglas. And for a long time, for about 6 out of the 7 days of the week, I would have told you, wow, I don't think I even watched one movie. However, today was a good day. Today was a non-corporate day. Today I got to watch some movies. I'm very happy that I recently reinstated my XBMC box. I have missed XBMC oh so much. And I woke up this morning, went to my TV and asked it, what movies do I own that were made in 2012? And it answered me. And I watched two of them. The first movie that I watched was Safety Not Guaranteed. That movie was awesome. It stars Mark Duplass, Aubrey Plaza, and Nick from New Girl. it's about a crazy man.
Jake Johnson is his name.
Jake, Nick from Johnson. New Girl Johnson.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Anyway, this movie is about a crazy person, played by Mark Duplass, who believes that he can travel back in time. Would like to travel back in time, but desires a partner to do so. And these folks from a magazine want to make fun of him, and they end up not making fun of him. That is a very shitty explanation, but go watch this movie. It's really good.
Have you seen this movie yet, Damien?
No, I have not.
Okay, then I can't ask what I want to ask.
Man, it's Andrew, it's crazy. It's crazy. Yes. Damn.
I've seen it. I love that movie.
I know you have. I remember you talking about it. Anyway, I also watched another movie today, and Damien is going to pat me on the back for this one. I watched The Sound of Your Voice.
Okay.
This is actually starring and written by, apparently, Britt Marley, who is, I guess, the driving force also behind another... Well, no, I won't say another. A horrible movie by the name of Another Earth.
Douglas, yes? You do know that she's not related to Bob Marley, right?
Oh, sorry, it's not Marley. It's Marlin or something like that. Yes, apologies.
Britt Marley.
Right.
Whatever.
Whatever. Just leave me in my
An unofficial daughter. One of the many.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Exactly. That guy sowed some serious seed, okay? Yeah.
There's no con off this earth that Bob Marley hasn't sown his seed.
No, this
I mean,
movie.
Once internationals wanted him perform.
Oh boy.
He just got. The gates just opened.
And trust me, those Europeans, they loved him to death. Okay.
All right, guys. Back on track.
Okay, this movie is about. I don't even want to call them journalists because they're not, but they want to be journalists. These two just crazy people who have decided that they want to do a documentary about other crazy people who they believe are crazier than they are. That's essentially what this movie is about. Yes. And throughout the movie, you kind of wonder, are they or are they not actually drinking the Kool-Aid? And this movie was fantastic. Damien, I have to give it to you. Despite this woman's many attempts, she got it right on this one.
hold on, right there.
You mean our other attempt?
What? Before we discuss the use of the word many, right?
Wait, right? No. When I say, okay, hold on. When I say many attempts, I didn't continue that process or that thought. I probably said it poorly. Despite her many attempts, in this movie, she got this. This movie was still right.
Okay.
I wasn't talking about otherwise because that was just one big ball of crap.
I still think you're wrong, but never mind. We've had this discussion.
We have had this discussion, and we've agreed that you're wrong, Damien.
Fair enough.
So,
movie God has decreed.
Yes, he has. And however, this movie is great. The acting is great. The story was actually surprisingly good.
Yeah,
like I wasn't sure even when I started watching it. I wasn't sure that I'd buy into it.
That was the part that you really surprised me. I kind of thought this movie was going to be trash. I only watched this movie because of her, and I had my affinity towards the other movie.
Yeah,
and I was. That is why I wanted you guys to see it, because I was worried that there was like overwhelming bias that I only enjoyed this movie because of her. Mm-hmm. But I doubted it the entire because she wasn't the part
of
the movie.
She was not the focus of the movie at
that
all.
I thought was the strongest part.
She was very much like the shark in Jaws. You know, she was always there in the subtext, but. But she was very much out of the picture for
perfect.
A lot of the time.
So Douglas,
that
think,
is beautiful.
You think the shark in Jaws was subtext?
Yes, he was. He was.
The movie
shark,
didn't follow the shark as he went around and bit
the shark
people.
Made about two appearances in that movie, Andrew. You know this.
And everybody was
panicking.
This is
very well documented. You own the 10th or 25th anniversary DVD. Watch the special features, and you will see that the people behind the movie tend to agree with me.
This is not even an argument worth having. You're right. That analogy was so perfect. I cannot believe it came out of Douglas. It's beautifully put. She is like the shark in Jaws. That is perfect.
No, this movie
How did you pull that?
I don't know.
We need to pause. Find out what in God's name is going on with Douglas this week.
Perhaps I've only been back to work for a week. You know, the mind-numbing pain that brainwashes me into zombiehood has not quite hit in. I don't know.
That is glorious. Oh, all right. So, Andrew, I take it you still haven't seen this movie.
No, I haven't. It's on my list. I will watch it before the year is out. That's definitely.
I trust you. Douglas is the one that.
Well, as you can see, I am making an effort. I am. Especially after I've gotten this box, it's made it
Damien,
much more accessible.
Yes.
Damien, our bets right now, right?
Yeah.
For the next month, Mm-hmm. He'll probably amass 10 films having watched, and that will be his top 10.
Oh, no. I was looking at some movies that came out this year, and I realized I actually have a decent set of films to choose from.
Where?
I do.
Is it the same year that I'm looking at?
No. This year? Okay. All right. Let me tell you.
I know you're planning to cheat.
No. Of course I'm planning to cheat. But we always cheat. We all do to some extent.
There are a lot of good films out there that we have not seen yet.
This is correct. And,
or at least films that have been touted as great.
And when I say that, what I mean is that I have a decent amount of movies that I've seen, I realize I've seen, that are actually good.
Mm-hmm.
I continue to watch good movies, mm-hmm. and I feel that by even in a month's time, I would have enough, or I hope I'd have enough,
to pick a solid 10.
Yeah, to pick a solid 10. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So right now, I could probably name you 10 movies that I thought were good, which is, you know, a good number to start with.
Well, I have the minimum.
but I've already added about 2 to those, and I well, actually,
fair enough.
Damon is going to kill me, but actually, I have added 3 to those, and I believe that there will be more to come.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So, Damon.
Yes.
What have you been watching?
Well, at least this week, it's easy to rank the movies that I've seen. I'll start from the worst and move up. The worst movie is Premium Rush. Cobra Commander is in a movie about bicycles, and it is horrendous. There is no way they could have made a good movie out of this. That is the thing. There's nothing about anything in this movie that would have made this a compelling watch. It's not like if they had better characters.
How did you like the traffic fool?
Alright, let's ignore all of that. Nothing. There's dumb shit in this movie, but it is just surface level dumb. And they don't, I don't want to say they take everything very serious, because there's nothing that serious in this movie. It's just a bad movie. And it saddens me to see Cobra Commander do this to himself. I understand that, you know, he has to make as much movies now, because he's probably the luckiest person in Hollywood. He was in Third Rock from the Sun, and now he's in almost every big movie you can think of. So whatever his agents are doing is clearly working. But this is a miss, and there's nothing in there that is, you know, you'd hope, like in the Fast and Furious movies, there's like a car chase scene. There's something, some spectacle in there that you could point at and go, yeah, the movie's bad. But that shit when they stole the safe and 2 cars was driving it down the street, that was awesome. There's nothing like that in this movie. It's just,
but I warned you, Damien.
It's kind of a train wreck. Yeah, but Cobra Commander is in it.
Along with Michael Shannon, and it's still a travesty.
Michael Shannon is horrible in this movie.
and tell me I wasn't wrong in thinking this, but they just so wanted to get Wesley Snipes to be that guy.
Yeah. Right. So Wesley Snipes has a son. He looks like him. He acts as good as he acts. And they put him in spandex and have him ride a bicycle. The movie's bad, Douglas. Like, straight up and down. Nothing redeeming. It's just ungood. This is the ungoodest movie I've seen this week. Middle of the Road now is for a good I'm going to leave that movie. skipping. For a good time call, there's a movie about these girls who open up a phone sex line. About,
I feel like I've heard this name before. I can't remember where.
I like that movie for all the wrong reasons. I don't know whether it's good or not, but there's another movie that I'd prefer to talk about. Why Stop Now stars Mark Zuckerberg and Tracy Jordan. And that movie is mediocre. Mark Zuckerberg plays himself again in this movie, and he doesn't do it well. It feels like they looked at Jesse Eisenberg and went, "We want a Jesse Eisenberg character in this movie."
But
and
they wrote that. Seriously though, right? Barring Facebook, which I would actually argue had a lot of Jesse Eisenberg in there. How many movies is Jesse Eisenberg in where Jesse Eisenberg doesn't play Jesse Eisenberg?
That is a problem. This is a... Even by that standard, even by him playing himself, this is still a bad version of it. Tracy Jordan
Hold on. I'd like to take a moment, right?
Yes.
I want to ask Douglas specifically some of the character actors that you enjoy thoroughly. Can you name a few?
Okay, let's name a few. I enjoy thoroughly John Turturro. I enjoy thoroughly Paul Giamatti. Character actors we're talking about here. I enjoy... what's his name?
Tobolowsky.
I do enjoy Tobolowsky, but no, I was thinking
That's a Mr. Play Himself in almost everything.
Shit, why'd you give me that name? I was thinking Peter Jenkins.
I know Douglas is trying really hard not to play into my argument right now.
Is Jenkins his name? Peter Jenkins.
You're thinking of Richard Jenkins. Richard Jenkins. Sure.
Yes.
Talking about stop right there. Douglas.
J. Jonah
Douglas.
Jameson. Who's that guy?
I'm not talking about the name of names great character actors. I'm talking about the ones that you love.
Oh, but I love these guys. I love everybody.
You know what I mean, Douglas? So I'm talking about love in the way that you love your 80s movies, love.
Remember you know that leg you were standing on, Douglas.
I know exactly. Why do you think I'm choosing these names, Andrew? I know exactly where you're going with this.
My point being, right? Jesse Eisenberg. Well, if you're not a fan of what he's doing, it will annoy you. People, and I'm using the general people, kind of like what he's doing. And for people like me who enjoy him in like Adventureland and Zombieland, and I'm sure I can name at least four other things where he is pretty much the same kind of character and the same demeanor to him, why stop? I mean,
Andrew, is why I qualified my statement by saying, even when you use that as the base, right? I'm not, my argument is not that I don't like him. It's not a Michael Cera situation where I loathe seeing him on screen. I don't have any issues with Jesse Eisenberg. But even if we take that as the standard, this is a poor version
of those characters. I was just going to Douglas.
Road. Fair enough, but the truth is I wasn't even making that argument either. I mean, I can see where you would have taken that from what I said, but I was just kind of putting Damon in his place where, you know, he said, Jesse Eisenberg is just playing Jesse Eisenberg in this movie, as if that doesn't happen every movie that he's in. I am one of those general people who actually do like Jesse Eisenberg playing Jesse Eisenberg, except playing for Adventureland. That's not
did you like
movie.
30 Minutes or Less?
I still haven't watched it. Movie that I know I'm going to enjoy. I've seen minutes and
don't
do enjoy it. But no? Okay.
Don't.
Oh, wow.
The mark that you're setting is too high for that movie.
Oh, wow.
You will like that movie if you go in expecting the worst. You'll come out on the other side amused. It's not a good movie.
Oh, wow.
Do not fool yourself into thinking about that movie in the terms of good.
Okay.
A movie is bad, but it is dumb enough that you will. People like us will enjoy.
But anyways, I've derailed this enough. Right. Damien, you were talking about that movie.
So, Tracy Jordan is bad. Jesse Eisenberg is bad.
On a side note, has Tracy Jordan been good in anything other than 30 Rock?
No, he has not.
Okay, because so I don't think will, so either.
Tracy Jordan is Tracy Jordan, you know, the thing.
What is the name of that movie? It's a Kevin Smith film. It's
no, don't you dare bring Cop Out into this argument.
No, not Cop Out.
Nobody's high and drunk enough to like that movie.
Wait, he was in another Kevin Smith movie? What movie are you talking about?
He was in
Jan Silent Bob. Strike Back, right?
And he was in like one scene.
He was, yeah, that doesn't count.
No.
You can't give a man a scene and then go, ah, that's perfect. He's good in that 30 seconds that he spent on the screen.
But he wasn't being Tracy Jordan, which is why I want to kind of highlight that one.
Right. But it, amidst these two mediocre performances, Melissa Leo is in this movie.
Which movie is this we're talking about?
Why Stop Now?
Right.
And this movie, I mean, we know that she's tremendous as an actress. This movie proves just how much better she is than pretty much everybody. Like, it was kind of unfair to put these two guys beside her because she is so good that she almost made me love this movie. And this movie surrounds her. She's Jesse Eisenberg's mother. He needs to go to this recital so that he can go play piano far away. She is a drug addict, so he wants her to go to rehab so that she can come out of rehab and take care of her daughter, her smaller daughter that Jesse Eisenberg is essentially taking care of. Her and the daughter. And so what has happened is they brought her to the rehab place. As luck would have it, they can't take you in if you're clean. So they need to go find somewhere to get drugs so that she can get her some drugs and get her into rehab.
Is that what?
And this is where Tracy Jordan comes in and hijinks ensue. And the movie is kind of run of the mill, kind of ordinary. But that is only if you extract her performance. But when you put it in there, then the movie becomes, it is approaching good. You know the movie isn't good, but she's so strong in this movie. And she's in pretty much everything else. She is, it is ridiculous just how good her acting is. Especially when there is these contrasting forces on either side of her. So the movie was way better than it has any right being. And I still don't think the movie's good in technical terms. But the movie is more than watchable just for her performance. She spends most time than anybody on screen. So it's pretty good. And now to the best movie that I've seen. I saw The Bourne Legacy. Now, when the movie came out, I went to Carib, and Carib did what Carib does best, which is fuck everything. And so I came out of the theater really angry because I saw about half an hour of the movie, but I didn't hear anything except explosions.
What do you mean exactly by they fucked up everything? What happened this time?
So we went in and the movie started. And you heard all the background noise being blared out of shitty speakers. But the center channel was either extremely low or not present at all. I couldn't tell because the background was so loud that... And for the first 20 or so minutes, there's not a whole lot of dialogue. There is dialogue because they're trying to catch you up with the story, but it's not like one person talking to another person. There's not a lot of it. There is some, but not enough. And so at about the half hour mark, I realized that this wasn't going to work and I left. But I was so angry that I didn't go back to watch it, even though that was an option. I just took my money and I went home. Because whenever Carib annoys me, fall back into the never going to Carib ever again thing. But you don't have that much options. Side of Carib or you don't watch movies when they come out.
Well, no,
which I have, which I went down that road
already. There is another option. There is another option. It's called Sovereign.
All right. So I got a chance to watch a movie again this week, and if we look at this movie as the fourth Bourne movie, then it's not spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it as relaunching Bourne, so you're comparing the first movie, the first Bourne movie, Bourne Identity, to Bourne Legacy, this is a stronger movie than the first one.
But you have to, and I especially loved, I still haven't seen the movie, but I really am interested because of the marketing campaign, right? So, I didn't watch much of it though, but I did see one trailer. I saw a few trailers, but the one that really made me want to watch this movie, because honestly, for a long time, just this whole newborn movie without Matt Damon, mm-hmm. that's gonna be Jeremy Renner and whatever it was, it didn't attract me at all. But then they had this trailer where they show you bits and pieces, you know, it's a regular action trailer, and then in the middle there somewhere they said, did you really think that Jason Bourne was the only one, right. or something like that, and then I was like, but that's perfect,
right.
that is, you know, what
so
you have to push.
You will love this movie because they've done that. Mm-hmm. What they have done is the first 50 minutes of this movie, they have skipped through the entire Bourne, the first three Bourne movies, but you don't get to see it. You hear news reports about what has happened, mm-hmm. and you see the effects. So this is why it is the legacy of Bourne. This is the effects of what Bourne is doing, because he's still actively doing it while the movie. It's not like the movie three ends and then this starts up. They start this up while Jason Bourne
is running around
in Moscow, yeah. and till he gets to New York and crazy shit's happen. And what they're showing you is that there is a, outside of what did they call black, what is the program?
There were two of them.
Black Briar.
There was the first one. Black Briar. Was that the first one?
Something else. What? It doesn't matter.
Treadstone
and Black Briar.
Yeah.
Are just essentially the tip. Jason Bourne was Gen 1 of this program. And
you know what I love right now, Damien?
Yeah.
You're using the exact same keywords which are in every fucking trailer from this movie.
Water. So he was Gen 1 of the Jason, of these type of super soldiers. Because that's what they're doing. They're creating super soldiers. And once he went rogue, there were consequences. No one wants to have these people, you know, flying off the handle and murdering everybody around them and coming after the people who designed these programs. And so our boy, the Incredible Hulk. How did he become the Incredible Hulk? Ed Norton is in this.
He was.
And
oh, okay. Alright.
He's great in this movie.
Hold on. Andrew, were you honestly going to answer that question? Is that what that was about?
No. I was confused because when he said the Incredible Hulk, I'm like, what, Mark Ruffalo isn't in this movie?
Oh, you idiot.
And then I'm like, but Jeremy Renner is Hawkeye. He's not the Hulk. What's going on? I forgot Edward Norton was in this movie, yeah. to begin with.
Right. So Ed Norton,
I didn't
is
like
great.
This movie.
Ed Norton is great in this movie. He plays old Ed Norton, and he's bitter and vindictive and manipulating, and he's just wonderful in the role, because all this movie is about those type of people who work in these agencies, who have to make horrible decisions, and you know you don't like these people, and Ed Norton plays it perfect. And then Jeremy Renner is a good Bourne replacement. He's not playing Jason Bourne. Jason Bourne is still out there running up and down. He's just playing this other guy. And of course, as with all of these movies, they have decided to murder all these people. He gets away. And this is the story, because it's the first one. This is the story about how he gets away. And of course, the rest of the movies will be him yeah. seeking revenge. But for this movie,
yeah.
this is just the getting away story. Rachel Weisz or Weisz or
Rachel
whatever
Weisz
it is.
Rachel Weisz is in this? I didn't know that.
She's in it. She plays a scientist and she plays it okay.
Well, that's the thing about Rachel Weisz, right? She has always looked very good while she was acting. She has never quite hit the good acting note, though.
Yeah,
I don't think.
I think I'd have to agree with you. I think I've spent more time looking at her than paying attention
to her acting. I don't want
to
say anything bad about her. There's nothing wrong with her acting. She's decent, but she never ever moves beyond
right. And so, by the end of this movie, you get the same feeling that you get at the end of all Bourne movies. Like, I want to see the next one of this. I want more of this type of action. Now, James Bond gave us a version of this in Skyfall. You know, this gritty. But James Bond is suave, right? So whenever he does things, he still does it with that James Bond, you know, type. Right, like at the start of the last of Skyfall, when he tore the train off, he jumped down and then he adjusted
his
cuff. I'm like, yeah, that's what James Bond is supposed to do.
Yes.
But Bourne is the kind of the other end. He is just the dirty fighting constantly, and you get a good amount of that. He wrestles a wolf, which is awesome. So awesome. Right? And then a drone blows that wolf to smithereens. So Douglas, you know you already like this. I don't know what Andrew's talking about. But this movie does what this movie needed to do. Get you hyped to see more Bourne. Is it the strongest Bourne movie? No. But that is unfair. Because that second Bourne movie pushed that bar way, way, way too high.
The second Bourne movie.
The first one was the one where he had the sniper battle with, and that was pretty much all he did.
Well, no, the first movie. I've watched it since, mm-hmm. And even when I first started watching it, I only thought, yeah, this movie's all right. And, you know, it was decent. It was a very strong introduction, right? Which is what you needed.
The second movie, remember,
the second one, so wrong.
The second movie started with them shooting the girl and then him murdering people for the next 2 hours.
Yeah, but the second movie, you know what, though? It was a good movie, but that fucking shaking bullshit was
fine.
Like,
Douglas, stop. Right? Yeah. Douglas, how did you like Bourne Ultimatum?
No, the third one was great. I think, honestly, here's what I'm going to say about that. I know a lot of people complain a lot about the shaky cam. I don't think I'm one of them, but I just did. So I have to at least back. Hold on. I'm not backpedaling. I'm justifying my comments.
Really? It was definitely worse in the second.
Yeah,
movie.
I think the shaky cam has its place, but. And I think that Greengrass got it right in the third movie. But the second movie, it felt to me like, I don't want to say the word novice, but somebody who just is perfecting their craft of this so-called shaky cam thing. And they're like, okay, let me do it here, let me do it there, let me do it there. And slowly they'll get great at it. But at that point, I don't think he was. I think he used it so often and so heavily in the second movie that it was extremely distracting. Now, for those people who just, you know, see shaky cam and say, no, this is foolishness, I'm not that. I thought that the third movie was fantastic, that the shaky cam in that was perfect and spot on, but the second one was distracting.
I'm going to justify why I like the second movie more than the third one. It is not because the second movie is a better complete movie than the third one. I like it because, in terms, what I enjoyed about Bourne was the action bits. It is still a run-of-the-mill kind of spy story. and he is seeking revenge. So it's revenge. The second one, from the word go. I mean, literally from the movie started till the movie ended, he was busy murdering people. It was nonstop. I remember it vividly, because of course I went back and watched all the Bourne movies, including this one. But in the second one, I really don't think much of a story was told. Like, you understood what was happening and why he was doing these things, but there was no real storytelling. It was, you know how we felt about them breaking up the last Harry Potter movie into two, and you just knew that the first one was just filler for the... But they did that with the second Bourne movie. But you didn't really pay attention to it because of how much people he was murdering. Well, I guess he has to do this. They didn't really wrap up shit, but... Guys, have you seen this? This is awesome. And so this movie, the Bourne Legacy movie, is... I like how they tie it into the original Bourne trilogy. I'm glad that it's not just a straight-up reboot. Jeremy Renner plays Jeremy Renner in this movie. He plays this aggressive guy who doesn't smile, doesn't make jokes. He's just this really efficient murdering machine. And he does that well. And the story is pretty good. They explain away a lot of things that is happening with this story and not with the original. They give you some context for the original, but there's no real explanations as to why that happened. They're just dealing with the after effects of why that happened. So the movie is really, it's really, really good, and it is 2 hours, and it is a quick 2 hours. You just sit down, and these things happen, and you go, yeah. At the end of the movie, you go, yeah, this is fun, a fun action movie. And Andrew is going to now tell me why I'm wrong.
No, Damon. All I have to say is that movie was a vapid waste of time.
Wow.
Vapid. And it is possibly one of the worst movies I've seen this year.
Whoa. No, listen.
Oh, my.
That is strong.
Oh, my.
You realize that they're... You realize this is 2012 we're talking about,
no,
right?
Do you remember when he attacked when he wrestled the wolf? Did you see that part? Were you asleep?
Yes, yes, I saw it.
So wait. I also saw
him running around shouting Kims for around at least an hour and a half in that movie.
Andrew, you realize, just put in your last comment in context, that this is a year where Cosmopolis was released. Right?
Oh god.
I did say one of, right?
Is there no... I just want to make sure that...
Yeah, but you also said vapid. And waste of time.
Well, I mean, if you pull my arm, I will tell you Cosmopolis is worse.
Alright.
If you pull my arm.
So, this is like... I've been trying to not do this as much, especially this year. But this is that time that I'm going to have to veto what the movie god says. Andrew's wrong.
You see, herein lies the time when we need our deciding vote. So we need Douglas to go and watch this movie.
But Douglas,
and come back next
Douglas
week
already
and
agrees
give
with
decided
me.
Vote. But he hasn't seen the movie.
It doesn't matter if he's seen the movie. Douglas is already on. I have told Douglas.
Listen,
I've given him
children,
enough information.
Children, enough
to win this argument
children,
without him seeing this movie.
Children, stop scuffling amongst yourselves.
Sorry.
I shall watch this film and we shall play who is correct. I shall give fair, balanced, and unbiased opinions
as
to why I love this movie. Now please end this argument and we shall bring it up at a later date.
I'd like if you did that with Warhorse though, so that we can finally end that argument.
Wait, did Warhorse come out this year?
No,
okay.
Side bet, Damien.
There's no chance.
How long
he's
will it take him to watch the movie?
End of the year, if we're lucky.
Honestly, I'm trying to beef up on the potentially top 10 movies. I don't. No matter how much I think I'm going to like this movie, I don't think this is going to be top 10.
This movie's really good. Because this movie's really, it's really good. You remember the Bourne movies?
Yes.
It's another one of them.
Oh, fuck.
Bourne Legacy.
Yes.
Versus Rambo 2.
Andrew. Look here.
You should see
that. Doesn't even make. Andrew, you're comparing
apples with bazookas.
The greatest movie of all time. With a Jason Bourne movie. That's not fair. You can't ask. Andrew, there's nothing that compares to Rambo.
Describe to me what's the greatest movie of all time.
There is one movie on this earth I like more than Rambo. One. And only one. Right? And I put that movie in a corner somewhere that it will never be reached until they release a Blu-ray. Go put it again. It is Ikiru, but Ikiru does not count. And then there is Rambo is cemented at one. There is nothing better than Rambo. It is, he won a war that America lost by himself. It is perfect.
I'm sorry,
this is a perfect movie.
Bazookas.
What is wrong with you? Have you seen Rambo First Blood Part 2? It is perfect.
I want to visit your Candyland and figure out how the hell you got there. But
the
sure.
Movie's the greatest movie of all time.
But anyways, Damon, is there anything else you've seen this week?
No. I'll just talk about those three movies. Everything else I've seen is like TV show shit. I still haven't seen 1 second of the third season of Walking Dead.
You should at least, you know, a half of a full season has gone.
Right.
Something. I don't know what you'd call it. They're on a hiatus,
right.
Now. So, no. Yeah.
No, there's one more episode.
Oh,
there's one
good.
More episode.
No, there's not.
And then it goes on break.
Oh, good.
There's an episode tomorrow.
I'm still on track. Still on track. Good. I'm very happy
because I'm pretty sure at the end of the last episode I saw, they were like, and next time on Walking Dead in January, you get to see this. And I was like, excuse me?
How dare you watch the next week preview? Those are just built-in spoilers. Mm. Anyways, what I've been watching this week.
The internet has destroyed this man.
Okay.
He just said built-in spoilers. As if it was an irrational thing to say.
I'm going to
Are trailers built-in spoilers? Stop watching trailers, Andrew.
No. They're not built-in.
Oh.
They're just straight-up spoilers.
Oh.
They're spoilers in short form.
Damn it. No, you've ruined trailers for me. I never thought of it that way.
Emotional spoilers.
Don't spoil this movie. You mean I can't spoil Live Free or Die Harder? Or whatever the hell the new one is. Die Hard 6.
No. We've gotten to Hard S.
Oh,
no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. The Die Hardiest. Let me guess. John McClane shoots. You ruined the movie. You don't know that. You don't know that. What if he doesn't shoot things?
He could give them flowers.
Yeah. He could be diplomatic.
He could eat vegetables.
Right. He could be the
diplomatic immunity.
That's a different movie. That's a different whole different series, Andrew. What is wrong with you? Also, you didn't do the accent right.
Oh, you idiot. Andrew Robinson.
I don't think I want to try.
Andrew Robinson, please do not try and tell me what you have seen this week. Let's just move past this point.
So I'll take Damien's format. Mm-hmm. And I'll go from worst to best.
Okay.
There is no worst. There is middle, a little bit better than mediocre, movie. I saw Beasts of the Southern Wild.
I don't think you understand how worse were. Yeah, if it is the last one, it is the worst.
Yes. Right?
The man who came last in the Olympic finals is still the worst. Yes, he's faster than everybody else in the world.
He's faster than the other 50 people who got knocked out.
There are 7 people on the planet faster than him, but he's still the worst.
So yes, Andrew, the worst was, sorry, what? The Beasts of the Southern Wild?
Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Okay, so I shouldn't watch that movie then, because really I was thinking watch about movie. Watching that movie. I saw that in my XBMC queue, and I was like,
I need to see this.
Yeah.
As I'm, first, understand, this isn't a bad movie. It's just not a great movie. I think it's just better than mediocre, and it might just be my tastes.
Which I'm starting to doubt again, because
you know, you gave me a free pass thanks to the FP, and I'm slowly gnawing at it.
Have you seen the FP?
XBMC says that the FP is a 2012 movie.
XBMC is lying.
Is that correct?
That is a vicious lie.
Because if it is, I will definitely watch it with the intention of putting it in my top 10.
Damon, it's a 2012 film, Douglas.
Andrew, you're an asshole.
Yeah, it's a 2012 film.
What do I smell? Is that the dirty smell of lies to get Douglas to watch movies? What is that?
Pungent.
Is that bullshit kinda like that I smell?
Horse manure. Is that horse manure?
So right, I was talking about the Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Came from a cow.
Horse manure from a cow. Wow, that's some serious levels of shit.
Horse bullshit.
Okay. So I was talking about Beasts of the Southern Wild, and for anyone who doesn't know what this movie is about, it's about a town by the name of Bathtub, which is on the outskirts of New Orleans, out of the levees. And they don't say specifically that it's happening during Katrina, but it's pretty obvious that's what they're kind of going for. And a storm happens, and the town is flooded out. Like, literally everyone is now in boats on the water, and they're trying to survive. And we kind of follow this child who goes by the name of Hush Puppies, and her father, as they try and survive this ordeal. The movie, it's very much in a, it kind of gives off a dog toothish vibe, for the sake that I don't really want to take about this in level of goodness, but for the sake that it almost redefines society. Like, they live in their own little micro-universe, because it's, you can see in so many ways they've kind of gone straight back to caveman days. Like, people go to the school, but it's kind of like this one crazy woman who has tattoos on her, and she keeps showing them, like, their hieroglyphics, telling about these big beasts who look like massive warthogs, who we actually see in the film at one point, and how they used to rule the land because men were too weak and they couldn't kill them. And like, there's one point where the father is sick, and Hush Puppy goes to this teacher, and she gives her some dirt to give her father to make him feel better. And it's kind of crazy, but in how it tries to talk about the Katrina way, it kind of gives it a vibe as to, instead of being like so many other documentaries where they're going, the world fucked up and you should cry for us, or we should go and complain to the government, it's kind of in this vein of going, I know this happened to us, but we're strong and we can deal with this. It's an empowering viewpoint of that incident, and I think that it's a really good idea. I don't think it was executed very well, and that's kind of where I'm not too in love with this movie. I was kind of, for some reason, based on the marketing, I imagined it was going to be more of a Where the Wild Things Are, Where it's like this whole weird child perspective of things, but it's just batshit crazy things happening in reality for some reason. I'm not a huge fan, but it is a very interesting film, and I wouldn't tell people not to watch it. You might just cry a lot. Moving up to a movie that I liked a lot, but I'm not going to quite say I fell in love with. I saw The Life of Pi, the new film by Ang Lee, about this boy who, on a boat going from India to Canada, traveling to sell the zoo, sinks, and he is stranded on a lifeboat with a tiger, and about his story of how he survived this, being stranded in the Pacific Ocean like this. It cuts in between him narrating his story and the actual visuals of it happening. And the movie is pretty much what it promised from the trailer. It's visually stunning. It's great. And the movie has some lovely beliefs in it, because for the first half an hour is before we're actually out to sea. It's, we get the story of him as he was in India with the zoo and all of these things which lead up to him leaving. And it kind of gives off a very, I think the best way to describe it is early on when he's narrating, when he's starting to tell his story, because it's a novelist who comes to him and asks him, so we already know from the get-go that he survives. Asks him to tell him his story. The way he presents himself is, someone told me that you have this amazing story that would make me believe in God. And his response to that is, well, I know I have a story. What you believe is up to you at the end. And I kind of have this fear that, for example, people like, and including Damien, will watch this movie and immediately have the reaction that he had to 127 Hours, where Damien went, so, as whatever that movie is, that would never happen to me because I wouldn't be stupid enough to go into the desert and get stuck under a rock. Where you would look at this movie and you would say, look, I'd have killed that tiger from the first minute of the movie. But the film, the story itself, it's moving. It touches you, and it makes you believe in things that you just didn't think were possible. It's a crazy, unbelievable story, and even at the end, it gives you an out. It gives you the ability to understand that this is a metaphor as opposed to a literal story, and you can choose to believe a more realistic version of that story or the metaphoric one. And the truth is, I want to believe in the metaphor of that he was actually on a boat with a tiger. That's actually what happened. And
wait, sorry, do you want to believe in the metaphor, or do you want to believe that it actually happened? Which one?
I want to believe that the metaphor actually happened. Does that make more sense?
No, it doesn't. But we're moving on.
Look, Andrew. I saw this movie this morning, and it's kind of still running around in my head. All I have to say is that I liked it a lot, and I feel like if I watch it again, I like it a lot more.
Andrew blames watching the movie this morning with not understanding what a metaphor is. Andrew, sorry. I have a story to tell you in return. I've been back and forth in my head about whether I do or do not want to watch this movie. This movie was released here on Wednesday.
I tried to watch it.
And I decided, you know what? I'm going to go and watch it tomorrow. Do you know that there is no showing tomorrow? Do you know that this movie did not even last a week in Jamaica?
Well, I guess me and Douglas didn't watch it, so they took that shit off.
Yeah, yeah. They learned a lesson. The last time they put out a supposedly good movie was The Master, and we were the only two people.
Two people saw that shit, so they went, "Nope, one more Spirit of a Skyfall. Let's go."
Okay, now into the phenomenal movies I saw this week. So,
Douglas, you do realize now that for every good movie that comes out, we have a 2-day window. Right, Andrew, what else?
I read somewhere that Lincoln is supposed to come out next week. There,
we're here.
Mm-hmm.
That would be fantastic.
Well, Jamaica,
which is kind of sad because I saw that my theater here is planning to release The Master and Lincoln February next year.
Oh, fun times.
Blu-rays would be all better.
About Life of Pi. Even more now that we'll never get a chance to see it. When you're talking about a movie that you supposedly like, try not defending the movie. No, go on the defensive from the get-go. Right?
No, but I love
Tell me what you love. The reason I wanted to see Life of Pi is because that trailer is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. That is where you should have started, and keep any reservations you have about the movie, especially because the other two people you're trying to sell this movie to haven't seen it. Even if it means
completely convinced,
right?
To begin
even
with.
If it means omitting some truths, right? Sell the movie first. And then have us berate you afterwards. But if you go in there, you're like, Damien probably won't like this because, you know, he didn't like this other movie. And it's kind of like this other movie. And then the story that they told is probably not a true story. That is a terrible job of selling anything. Right? Just go, this is the most beautiful thing I've seen. The acting was superb. Ang Lee's back. And then just pretend none of that other things that you kind of didn't like.
Everybody, guys, Damien's rules to selling movies. Right. You should go and work for the
Weinsteins. This shit is awesome.
Ignore the thing
in the corner.
But anyways, to the phenomenal movies I've seen this week. I saw Killer Joe, the new film starring Emile Hirsch.
Boy.
And
Matthew McConaughey,
Thomas Hayden Church and Matthew McConaughey. All
right, before Andrew talks
he wants
about
me
this
to believe
movie,
that.
Before Andrew talks about this movie, I want to at least put a word in.
Mm-hmm.
I have not watched this movie in total.
Okay.
I have, however, watched about the first hour, and Andrew is going to have to really sell the shit out of that second half hour.
He saw a different
out
movie.
Of the last half hour. Andrew, go.
I like this. I like when it's combative.
So is this the time when I have to go on the defensive?
Yes.
Anyways. No, you have to sell the shit out of this movie. Because nothing I saw in that trailer and nothing I've heard about this movie is anything that you are... Like, the only thing Andrew is like, if Matthew McConaughey doesn't win an Oscar, then this, that, or the other.
Well, you see, the thing about it is, right?
And
Andrew
now I'm
can
hearing
sell
that
me,
it is the best movie
Andrew,
of all time.
Andrew can sell me on Matthew McConaughey. Mm-hmm. Here is where he starts about 10 steps behind everybody in the race. Lowell from Wings is in this movie.
Oh, yes.
Andrew, continue.
Hold on. You have something against Thomas Hayden Church?
Yeah, oh, so many things. Let's try every movie he's ever done.
Andrew, we cannot continue to have a podcast if somewhere in your mind you believe that Thomas Hayden Church is good at acting.
I think he's a phenomenal actor.
Where?
He does. Hold on.
No, Andrew. Seriously?
Yes, seriously.
Name one good movie. Outside of this one, because I know you seem to think this one is a good movie. Name one good movie other than Sideways that he is in.
He was in Idiocracy. He was in...
I know he was in Idiocracy.
He was in Smart People.
Oh, my God.
He was in Sideways.
I will give regular people Sideways because apparently can everybody seems to like that. Page, but please. That movie was horrible, and he was horrible in it.
Because I don't think I want to do a podcast with people that think like this. I think Andrew might be throwing away all his FP cred.
Right.
And
now
he's wasting it on this person who is barely an actor, in my opinion.
I mean, I have certain nostalgic views on Wings in particular, and he's a major part of that show. However, okay. I will say this. You know it's bad when... I used to love that show, and when I think about Wings, even now, I get a warm feeling in my heart. But that show is on Netflix, and every time I watch it, my face is in... The only way to describe what my face looks like is contorted, in pain and anguish.
It is like saying... I liked Home Improvement and Tim Allen is awesome. That is a vicious lie. You should be shot because of it.
See, herein lies the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Thomas Hayden Church, I think, is a phenomenal actor. What I also think at the same time is he's in a lot of fucking horrible movies.
Thomas Hayden Church, let's go down the list. John Carter. We Bought a Zoo.
Oh my god.
Oh, I saw a poster for this. Zombie Roadkill.
Yeah, let me know. Easy A.
But he was not the good reason, the good thing in that movie.
Look, I like him. Alright. Andrew, McKay, is that what you want me to say?
Smart People. Yes. Spider-Man 3.
Fine. I like him. He's not good.
No, he's not. I have, honestly, Andrew, right. you're going to have to try hard to... give me a movie that I feel I can actually agree with you that he was good in. I don't think I can.
Right, Andrew, liking somebody and thinking they're good is not right. They are oftentimes mutually exclusive. I would point to Zooey Deschanel, but that is too easy. Right, Zooey Deschanel is not good in anything. You guys like her, and that is fine. I like Thomas Hayden Church. That doesn't mean anything. You cannot use him as some high watermark, as if he's not good, Andrew. So please, take that out of your argument and move on.
I haven't even begun my argument about Killer Joe.
Douglas hates your movie. I don't know.
Well, no. All I have is the trailer. I wouldn't go as far to say hate. Hate the movie. But
all I have to go by is the trailer and Douglas's hate. Sell me this movie.
Wow. I feel like I should just skip and move on.
Andrew, can you... I don't know whether or not to see the movie at this point. You love it, and that is fine. If Matthew McConaughey gives a tremendous performance, I'll watch the movie just for that. But you're selling me more than that. You're telling me that the movie is more than Matthew McConaughey's great performance. You said that the movie is phenomenal. Why is the movie so good?
What I loved about this movie was... Let's just skip the automatic Matthew McConaughey was fantastic. Because that's what everyone says about this movie right now. Right? That's a given for this film. And if Douglas doesn't think that halfway into this movie, then he should just only watch Transformers for the rest of his life.
Is he Magic Mike fantastic?
Are you trying to trick me? Is that a trick?
Cheap shot. Moving on. Right.
The film...
What is the movie about? Can you start with that? Something easier. The movie is about...
Emil Hirsch needs money.
Shut up.
So he gets somebody kill his mother. Come on. You know this already.
As Douglas said, and who he gets to kill him, his mother, is Joe, played by Matthew McConaughey, who is a police officer, a detective. But Emil Hirsch was ill-informed as to the price for this service. And Joe then says, as he's walking out the door, says, you know what, I'll make a special arrangement with you. Since we're doing this so that you can get a life insurance claim on your mother, I'll get the money eventually. But for now, you have to give me your baby sister. Oh, I said baby sister. I probably shouldn't say baby. She's like 19 or something. Sister, and they basically hook them up, and he gets to do as he wants with her. The movie is based off a play, and it's kind of obvious the way that the movie is set up, the way that the movie is presented. You know those movies which are based off plays where everything is between very few characters, there are not that many changes in set, and the film stays very intimate with the audience.
Yeah, essentially a David Mamet film.
Hold up right there.
Oh my god.
Hold up,
Andrew,
right there.
Andrew, could you just have been the bigger man and ignore that last statement?
No,
he's trolling
you. I'm not talking to Douglas right now.
Wow.
I want to talk to Damien.
Yes.
Do you not like David Mamet?
Did you hear me make that statement?
I heard laughter from you.
Yes, because
Douglas, I don't care about.
No, it's because Douglas is trolling you, and you are allowing him to troll you. All you had to do was ignore that statement, but you couldn't do it. You couldn't be the bigger man. You had to engage in Douglas. All right, his immaturity. Now I am no stranger to be immature, but that one was easy, right? Could have just shook that one off and moved on. So the movie is intimate, right? Like, let's say a Lars von Trier movie.
Actually, that was the second one I was thinking of. Dogville is completely a play.
Good stuff.
So what I loved about this movie was that very fact, the way in which we felt so close to everything that was going on, even though the idea that's being pushed around, which is this murder, and we're watching these people trying to figure out how everything is going to go by. And at the same time, I think what I've forgotten to mention is the reason why Emil Hirsch needs this money is he's gotten into trouble with some drug dealers, and he's trying to stay out of their way at the same time. So we have this ticking clock of Emil Hirsch trying not to get caught by the drug dealers who are looking for him, and getting Joe to do the job so that he can then get the life insurance. The movie was pretty much a good movie for that first hour where Douglas is complaining, but where it kind of pumps up is that last set when everything comes to a head. The acting gets turned up to 1,000 on the volume, and it is
to 11, Andrew, to 11.
Yes, that idiot could only go to 11. Matthew McConaughey pulled that amp that went to 1,000.
Awesome.
Like, honestly, I'm not going to say that he deserves to win the award this year, because, I mean, with some other movies which we've talked about,
exactly,
namely The Master. Yeah? If he doesn't, at the very least, get nominated for this movie, it is a crime on cinema of 2012. That final scene, in the way that the family changes, it kind of blew my mind watching it. So yeah, Douglas, please finish watching this movie.
Yeah, fair enough, Andrew. And this is what I said to you. I said to you that you're really going to have to sell that second hour, and I guess you are. And despite what both you and Damien have said, I never said that I didn't like the first hour of this movie.
Pretty sure you said we hated it. Rewind the tape.
No. The first hour was only... Honestly, I wasn't extremely entertained. It was all right. And it was clearly a big setup. And I guess I just didn't get beyond the setting up portion. So I will give you...
Douglas, be honest. You couldn't get past the fact that you hate Emil Hirsch because he was in Speed Racer, the greatest movie from 2008.
All right, Andrew, one thing you have to understand about me, right, is, first of all, for Speed Racer was horrible. Second of all, I tend not to hate actors that I've hooked into for one reason or another. Emil Hirsch is one of those people I hooked into. Why? Fuck Speed Racer. I watched a movie by the name of The Girl Next Door. That was...
Movie's pretty good.
Amazing. He was one of the many reasons for that. I mean,
that movie was amazing.
The standout because for of that movie was Mr. Timothy Oliphant. But Emil and Hirsch Paul Dano played was in his that part. Movie. He was. Yes.
Look, if we judge people using actual logic, we'd have to stop doing this podcast. There's a lot of people that we like that we'd never be able to watch again.
Of course.
And there's a lot of people we don't like that we'd be forced to watch a lot more of. Alright, so Killer Joe, and there's another movie that you wanted to talk about. What is the other great movie?
I don't know if any of you guys have seen this one yet. I watched this film by the name of The Impostor. Any of you guys seen it yet?
Nope.
So this is a documentary. And it's telling a story of a...
It's a documentary.
In 1997, there was a guy who...
Oh, I know this one. Sorry, continue.
I thought Douglas was just going to go there. There was a guy who presented himself as a lost child and was accepted into this family as the child 4 years after he went missing. And the movie doesn't hide it from the get-go. It implies, if not says outright, that this guy was not the child that in question that he took the place of. And it takes us through the steps of how he systematically got into this situation, and it takes us through his own insanity of how he kind of wrestled with the morality of what he did, and at the same time his own perceptions and opinions of what was happening around him at the time when he eventually got into the family. The movie uses a lot of recreations, and it uses it very, very artistically. There's even certain points where they will have, for example, the movie starts off with a phone call, which is from a person who has found this supposed child, to call the police to come and get him, to say that there's something wrong here, you guys should come and get this guy. And you will have situations where when they're talking about it, you will see they have filmed a recreation of it, and you'll see that the guy's lip-syncing what the actual interview, the talking head, would be saying. So you're not really watching the talking head at that point, and it makes it very, very engaging through this technique. And I feel like this might be my favorite documentary that I've seen this year, and my favorite documentary since the likes of Man on Wire, because I feel it's that good. While this is a story which definitely is completely unbelievable. You can't, and this is 1997, this is post 9/11. You couldn't believe this kind of thing happening today. You couldn't believe that someone could so easily fool their way into becoming an American citizen and getting into the country.
No, He-Man Post. I think He-Man, but yeah, now that he's...
No, country. He-Man Post. What year was this?
This was 97.
And this was before or after 9/11?
Pre. Did I say post accidentally?
Cool. Okay.
Sorry. No, if I said post, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It's just that as you moved on, you kept talking about how much harder it was to become, or you kind of implied how much harder it was to become a citizen.
No, what I was
and so
saying.
It made, it, yeah, it kind of sounded like you meant to say post.
No,
at first
no.
I went. I was honest, I was berating Douglas. I'm like, no, Douglas, he meant pre. It was just, and then you kept talking about, like, does he mean?
No, yeah. Moving on. Honestly, I don't think there's a documentary that this year that I've seen which I love this much. You guys really need to see this movie. I think this is more up Damien's alley than Douglas for some reason. It's a fantastic film. And when you eventually get to that point where they reveal exactly who he is, it kind of plays with insanity the way that Tabloid did.
It's
in that
Tom Cruise,
you start.
You start to
get into the mentality of who this guy is, and it's really interesting.
So Andrew, I have a real question, right?
Go ahead.
Oh no.
What did I say wrong? What did I mistakenly say?
This is on a serious note. You said that you really love this documentary, and you mentioned other documentaries. You said that this is the best documentary you've probably seen since, say, Man on Wire. And I wonder how really random that choice was, or perhaps it was a subconscious thing. But do you think that there is any reason that you'd think of Man on Wire especially since both of those documentaries rely pretty heavily on recreations, and is there, do you think that really and truly you don't like documentaries, but because there's a recreation, it's a movie enough for you to like it? That's what I would. I'm not a big documentary fan, so that's how I would look on it. But is there that reason why, you know, you... Off the top of your head, the first thing that came to your mind was,
you guys hated
was Man on Wire. Yeah, but there were, but that didn't have. Did that have recreations?
No, it didn't. Okay. It had actual footage.
Exactly.
All right, never mind.
And that movie was horrible. But yeah, so Andrew, do you think that there's any credence to that?
Maybe. But then at the same time, one of my favorite movies from last year was Senna, which was all real footage of Senna
and
happening.
Talking Heads. Yeah, but Senna has, well,
it's sports.
For me, it's kind of.
Yeah, you have the bias.
Yeah.
But also, it's sports, it's easy to make stock footage of sports look exciting exciting to begin with.
Although, that Tyson documentary was very good.
I never watched that one. I kept meaning to, but I never did. But anyways.
Shit ton of terrible Ali documentaries.
I think the reason I picked Man on Wire was because of the recreations, because it to me it was close enough of a comparison that's the one that I want people to think of when they decide to watch this movie, so that they're like, oh, I like Man on Wire, maybe I should watch The Imposter, as opposed to me just saying it's a good documentary and someone having to be like, I like documentaries generally.
You know what's really weird? I really do like documentaries, but I don't watch a lot of them. There's very few documentaries that I've come away from going, that was really bad. Most documentaries that I've seen, I really kind of enjoy. I just don't. I remember the last one that that I didn't like go out to watch was Into Eternity. It was the one about nuclear waste. And I really did like that one. I wanted to see Cave of Forgotten Dreams. And to this day,
I saw that one. I haven't seen that movie. But my problem with that movie is it's like 15 minutes too long.
I'll sit and watch terrible movies. It's so rare that I actually sit down and watch a documentary, but I should watch more because I don't know.
I actually brought this up at one point where I mentioned how I have this love of documentaries, and I think it's the same reason why we talk about Korean films, and it's because we wait until like the end of a year, and then we wait to hear which ones have bubbled up to the top of the documentary genre, and we watch those instead of watching every documentary that you've ever heard of for the year. And then, because I'm like, I think every year that I'll watch like tops at most 15 documentaries, but there are like tons of documentaries every year which are made and released.
I guess to movies, like straight up regular movies have the can surprise you. But if a documentary is bad, people flag it really quickly. It's not like there's never a lot of controversy about whether a documentary is good or bad. It like every now and again it comes down to taste. There's Zachary and Restrepo, but then more than likely it's a good documentary. It just depends on the level that you like it or not. And when they're terrible, people kind of just ignore them. So I guess it's easier that way. The FP has a 4.5 on IMDb, and that is a lie. People see that and go, oh, so this movie is terrible, and they're all wrong. The movie is terrible, but it's not 4.5 terrible.
It's 10.00
Every time I talk to the director on Twitter, I kind of smile.
I don't want to. I want the FP to stay perfect. I don't want him to write some nonsense on Twitter and then it diminishes how I feel about the FP. I want him to be this ominous force that created the FP and then dies. Never to be seen again. We should move into the trailer section, although we probably shouldn't. We ought not to. This week has been dreadful. Is it because of Thanksgiving? Is that it?
Perhaps.
Although, no.
No, Thanksgiving was last week, though.
No, I know why. Yeah. All the trailers are terrible. There's big movies coming out in December. And all the really spectacular trailers for next year movies are being hitched to like The Hobbit and Django and some of those movies. So I guess everybody's keeping everything under wraps until the giant movies come out. And then they can put out their shiny new trailers for movies people are going to watch regardless.
The promotional spoilers.
So this week in promotional spoilers, the only trailer I kind of want us to talk about is A Glimpse Inside the Mind of Charles Swan Part 3.
You're a big fake liar.
You're incredibly irresponsible.
You don't listen.
You're crazy. You're selfish. You're not the only person, Charles.
I thought I was different with her. And then, poof.
I don't want to be with you anymore.
I can't concentrate. I think of her every minute.
Whoa, whoa. Zing. Rewind. What did you do?
She said she didn't want to
film by Roman Coppola, the guy who wrote Moonrise Kingdom, starring Charlie Sheen, Bill Murray, and a lot of other people who I didn't really recognize. I think Jason I saw Jason Schwartzman in there.
A very bearded Jason Schwartzman is in this movie. Andrew, why did you make me watch this trailer? This trailer looked like the work of Wes Anderson's highly incompetent second cousin.
Oh my god.
Oh dear.
Oh, you mean Roman Coppola.
So I am not, repeat, not impressed by this trailer. However, it has the star power behind it. It has Jason Schwartzman, Bill Murray.
Are you keeping score, Damien?
I'm
waiting for you to say Charlie Sheen as part of the star power segment.
Let's forget about him. I'm pretty sure I saw Claire Danes.
Hot Shots Part Right?
which for a long time I enjoyed when I was like 10 or however
I always remember that intro scene where they kind of spoof Rambo 3.
Yes.
And he goes in the fight and then he kicks him in the balls and then he just spits his testicles out or something like that. Is that what happens?
Yeah, that's what happens. I like them keeping count of the amount of bullets that he fired.
Yeah.
I like the girl that backflipped off the upstairs onto his dick. I don't remember that.
I haven't watched that movie in forever.
You probably shouldn't.
Yeah. The only other thing I remember is the moving mole.
Yeah, the mole moved, and then there was Saddam Hussein at the end, and there was a lot of shit.
The movie is better if it stays in nostalgia. Yeah. I'm not going to watch a movie again. Yeah. I'm going to keep myself pure.
But
that and my newfound hatred of Charlie Sheen is preventing me from watching.
Right. So let's talk about this movie now. This movie, as I say, doesn't look good, but the people that are in it, Charlie Sheen, at least are making a sizable effort to draw me into watching a bad movie.
Charlie Sheen is the reason you'd watch anything. He's Charlie Sheen.
And with that, I turn over the commentary to Damian White.
All right. I watched 2.5 Men for about 4 seasons.
It wasn't a bad show. I liked it for... Whenever I
saw you actually gave up, Damien?
No, I don't watch. Whenever I decide that I no longer like something, I don't do like what Douglas does and try and see if there's something at the end of it. I just give up. I just go, oh, this is garbage, and move on, because I always have definitely more TV shows to watch. But for the couple seasons I saw it, it was pretty good. I didn't loathe Charlie Sheen until he started talking last year.
but I thought he was winning.
I don't care what he was doing. The more he invaded my
Have you watched
bubble
Anger
of the
Management,
internet.
By the way?
No.
I saw the first half of the first episode. It is disgustingly bad.
Yeah.
I just have one question, Douglas. Because I haven't watched it either. Is it a reality show, or is it like a narrative scripted thing?
No, it's an actual regular old sitcom. okay. And it stars Charlie Sheen alongside, do you remember Arliss?
Yeah,
Robert Wool.
The bald-headed black man from Arliss.
Oh
him. I remember him more from
not in As Good As It Gets. Cuba Gooding Jr. is in As Good As It Gets. He was in Spin City, which Charlie Sheen took over from Michael J. Fox. So maybe that's where they got that relationship from and thing. But Andrew, yes, Cuba Gooding Jr. is in As Good As It Gets. Right.
So back to this, that terrible trailer. I don't know how much you guys did this, but I don't pay attention to celebrity news.
No, nor do I.
Right. And it is because I don't care. It's the same reason whenever I see articles about like sports personalities, their personal life, I kind of get upset because I don't read those websites, so I don't expect to get any of that information. So when it invades these things. It kind of annoys me because I don't care about them as people, because I don't know them as people. So when Charlie Sheen had his meltdown, it was everywhere. BBC News reported on it. And whenever things like that happen, I tend to get aggravated because it is not what I go to the internet for. The internet is great because it can, while it can broaden your scope of the world, it can also make the world extremely narrow. If you keep to only certain sites, you never know about anything that you don't want to know about. So Charlie Sheen went from being this actor to being this lunatic with despicable behavior. And so while I wasn't watching anything from Charlie Sheen at the time, it doesn't really endear you to watch anything else that Charlie Sheen is in. Comedy Central had a roast of Charlie Sheen, and there's a couple good jokes, but even the roast of Charlie Sheen I found boring. He got the Anger Management show. I haven't seen. I don't even. All I know that is the show is there. I haven't seen a trailer. I haven't seen anything. When Andrew forced us to watch this trailer, I saw him and of course had a negative reaction, but was willing to give the trailer a chance, because people do bad things, but that doesn't affect whether or not they're good at acting. I'm sure there's many worse people that I watch every day on TV, but this trailer is terrible. It had some of the whimsy of a Wes Anderson film, but kind of none of the execution. And you can tell that, when you can tell that from the trailer, it's kind of bad. You just know that it's not going to be Moonrise Kingdom. It won't be Fantastic Mr. Fox. It will be something else that is aiming for that, but has missed the mark. And I think definitely with those movies, they're so specific to what they are that if you make a lesser version of them, it's just going to fall to pieces. Because expect, like Moonrise Kingdom, if it wasn't done so well, that movie would have been a train wreck. And you can see where he kind of expertly wove through all of the mind and he came up with this gem. The trailer that they've presented to me does not look like a gem. It looks like they're trying hard and they're going to, like, even at the very end when he pulled out the arrow and there was the laughter, you kind of see where what they were going for, but even then you went, there's something off about even that. And so I don't know. Outside of my hatred for the Coppola family at this point, which I try not to mention, but he is writing and directing this movie, so that does not fill me with hope.
Roman Coppola has been a writer with Wes Anderson for a long while. They did Darjeeling together, I believe.
Ooh, I really like that movie.
Right, but Wes Anderson did Moonrise Kingdom. Can you tell me what Wes Anderson's job is on this movie?
I don't know. Pat Roman on the back as he.
Well then. So the trailer is mediocre, and it does what a trailer should probably never ever do, which is fill someone with the dread. this doesn't look like it's going to be good, guys. And part of me wants to see it because there is a Wes Anderson vibe to it, but the trailer is not filling me with anything except dread at this point. Andrew, what did you think about the trailer?
I pretty much agree with you, Damien, but no. I kind of have an extra level to it where I have an extra level of interest in it, in that and this can be just me latching on to this, right? Which is that it's very obvious that it's playing on a ridiculously whimsy level, and from how the trailer kind of gives us all of these settings, and I'm pretty sure you caught it, Damien. The movies that they're referencing in those settings, you can see Bill Murray dressed up as John Wayne in Stagecoach. Right. You see. I think it was Jason Schwartzman, or was it Charlie Sheen, who's being lighted like he's in the movie Lenny, by Bob Fosse about Lenny Bruce. And you can see that there's some generic sci-fi movie that's happening in there, and even a gangster movie. I couldn't catch if that was a direct reference to anything specific.
Like an 80s movie thing that is going on.
And and I'm just gleaming this away from that kind of jumping around in genre and referencing to the title, to being, is this movie going to be me going through some dreams of Charlie Sheen, and he's dreaming, he's in all of these movies, and I'm slightly interested to see if it actually turns out good, but I am not really expecting it to. As you say, it feels like he's trying a Wes Anderson thing, but you don't imagine it being executed very well based on this trailer. But due to all of those reference points, I kind of have a extra level of curious added.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure when he called up Bill Murray and he told him you get to be John Wayne, Bill Murray's like, fuck yeah.
We'll never see this movie. Won't get any. In fact, you will probably never see it either, Andrew. It's not just us. We'll have to wait 8 months, 6 to 8 months. We'll see if any of us remembers this movie before next year, for the end of next year. Nah, that would be the true litmus test. We'll all see this movie come out and go, that movie again. And we move.
I come and go, was waiting for the world to end. Now that the truth is just a rule that you command. You crack the whip, shape shift and trick the past.
Are you mad at me?
Remember how Dad used to say I had an overactive imagination?
That's scary.
Kelvin, but there's no possible way that Ruby's in your house because she's not a real person.
Can you see her?
Kelvin!
She's real.
Ruby!
What is going on with you?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Kiss me, stupid.
There's got to be some logical explanation. People don't appear out of thin air.
She did.
How?
I don't know how. It's love. It's magic.
Have you tried writing more? Write something about her and see if it comes true. If it does, this is a miracle.
So, this week, Douglas asked us to review Ruby Sparks, a film...
Can you repeat the name of the person who chose the movie? So that there's no confusion. Douglas what?
Douglas.
Chose this movie?
Yes.
Who chose it?
Douglas.
Okay, alright.
I'm not sure what that was going for, but sure. So, Douglas, why don't you tell the people what this movie's about?
Yes, Douglas.
This is a magical movie. This movie stars Paul Dano and Zoe Kazan. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right.
So it's like those Hogwarts movies.
Yes.
Okay.
Paul Dano is kind of a burnout.
He's Paul Dano.
Yet a once phenomenal novelist.
Genius. He was a genius.
Genius, but he hates that word.
At 19,
he wrote a book that was wildly popular. And
we don't know what the book is about.
We don't know what the book is about.
It's impressive.
But it's generally loved and touted as one of the classics or going to be a classic, you know, when time has done its thing. And he needs to write a second book, but kind of is nowhere with it. He has a lot of personal issues. You know, he's a writer, therefore he must be a little bit crazy and depressed and, you know, all of that jazz. And he's very nerdish, of course. He's very stereotypical.
He is Paul Dano.
He is Paul Dano. They definitely chose the right person to play this role. You know what would be funny, though? Just as an aside, I bet you if you were to meet Paul Dano, he is the most gangster motherfucker there is.
I'd take that bet 9 million zillion times. There is nobody that good at acting.
So side note, and I'm pretty sure this falls into the category of Damien not giving a shit.
Yes.
If you paid attention during the credits, it's written by Zoe Kazan.
Yes, it is.
And she actually wrote the roles for her and Paul Dano because they're actually in a relationship.
Oh, I didn't know that. But anyway, I don't care.
I know that because I heard some interview 1 point ago. That's what happens when you subscribe to NPR.
Okay. Oh, it was probably Fresh Air.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me actually talk about this movie and tell you what it's about.
Sorry.
So this movie is about Paul Dano, a writer, who finally figures out what he wants to write for his, well, not necessarily his second book. It starts off as a bit of an exercise for therapy, and then,
because of course he's going to therapy,
of course, and then it kind of balloons into this great story about a woman that he has invented and would like to be with. He is in love with this woman who he has written in his book. He sees her in his dreams and he wishes he could be with her. So much so that finally one day he wakes up and she's actually there. So of course we've already gone into the parallel universe known as crazy science fiction romance
movie land.
Right? Movie land. And it gets even better. Not only is she there, but he realizes, along with his brother, that if he continues to write the story of this woman, she continues to act it out. So he essentially can play God and can make her do whatever he wants. Which, as his brother points out, for all men everywhere, he needs to not waste this opportunity.
Yes. That scene was awesome.
Yes. Unfortunately, he does waste the opportunity, that is. And madness ensues. And I wasn't going to start this review off, but I will, because I've heard Damien's views on them, and I soundly disagree.
Okay.
I love this movie. Damien mentioned a movie to me, and the truth is, that was a movie I was thinking of as well, and I watched this. This is like a better version of Stranger Than Fiction. Stranger Than Fiction, we all kind of agree, is a pretty decent movie.
Despite
Queen Latifah. This movie is better than that. I have to say, alright? So, I don't know where along the way Damien was thrown off the wagon. But this movie starts off slowly and pretty decently. You know, this guy, they set up all of what, you know, I just described. Who this person is, Paul Dano. The fact that he really, you know, doesn't have a life. He doesn't have friends. And he would really like to be in a relationship with this pretend woman. Right? They do a very good job of setting that up. And when she comes to life, he, rightfully so, thinks he's crazy. And for a little while, you know, you have this comic relief. And the truth of the matter is, you have a bit of comic relief throughout this movie. I think there was a point, right, where they went a bit far. there was a point when, as you know, is bound to happen, reality kicked in. This perfect girl who he created actually wasn't that perfect, right? She, or perhaps she was too perfect, and you know, she was moving a little bit away from the script,
right? This
per se
boring curmudgeon of a human
being. Exactly. Why would the perfect girl want to be with Paul Dano?
The worst.
That doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And finally, she understands that and is, you know, inching slowly but surely away from him. And he realizes, hold on, I'm an idiot. I can just make her do whatever I want. And that doesn't end very well because she becomes a shell of a person. I can't even call her a shell of a person. She just becomes a shell. And the, what are the words? The shenanigans that she gets up to in that time are downright atrocious. But while I was watching that portion of the movie, it did feel like the shark was jumped. And it was to some extent, but they were able to use that very well and to move on into the rest of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I have nothing but really good words for this film.
Fine.
It was a great mixture between popcorn, or not quite popcorn,
you said,
but
slapstick.
No, I wasn't about to say slapstick. No. Light comedy versus some fairly serious moments. So I think that while this may not be, or no, scratch that, this is not the greatest movie of 2012. It is definitely not the best. It's still up there. It's a solid
waste of time.
A solid 9, I would give it. I really, really enjoy this movie.
Wow.
Now, before Damien trolls me on this film, I would like Andrew to talk about this movie.
Douglas.
Oh, fuck.
You made me watch Ruby Sparks. And the only problem I have with what you just said is you didn't give the movie enough praise.
Oh, yes! Andrew, I love you.
No, I'm going to take it a step further, right?
I'm sorry, did I watch a different movie?
I think you did. You pulled another Intouchables on us.
I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Cause
I saw
Douglas.
A separate Paul Dano movie where you wrote a book. Alright, guys. Go right ahead. I'll shoot two birds with one stone.
Yes.
Fine.
Let me throw out how I feel about this, and you can tell me how wrong I am, as I usually am. But Douglas, what you touched on was very much on the entertainment level of this movie.
Okay.
Which I agree with highly. But I want to go a level higher. I want to go into what this movie is actually talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic idea that it wants to play with is one that's been kind of bubbling around for a while, which is the idea of the manic pixie dream girl. And one of the films that everyone quotes when talking about this topic is one of, I hope I can say, a Tump favorite, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Can I say that?
Sure. Yes.
Sure.
Okay.
Damien, but yes.
Guys, sure. Whatever.
When talking about the character of Clementine, played by Kate Winslet, and she has this line in the movie, kind of describing her, who we all glorify in that film as the perfect girl. Where she says, and I quote, too many guys think I'm a concept or I complete them or I'm going to make them alive. But I'm just a fucked up girl who's looking for my own peace of mind. Don't assign me yours. And that's pretty much what this movie struck on perfectly, as Paul Dano is dreaming up this woman and writes who he considers to be the perfect woman, and it works out so well. But the perfect woman doesn't really mean that she's perfect for you, and as we see it turn into the logical next step of that relationship, where she kind of wants to stray away because, as you said, Douglas, reality is kind of hitting. Then we get to the point where, because this is a girl that he's created, and because this whole idea of this manic pixie dream girl, the way that people conceptualize it, it's a creation. We then get to see him mess with that creation more. And that scene, where I'm pretty sure you were talking about directly in saying, you say, jump the shark. Yeah. Yeah. I think it was just hammering that point harder. It might be a scene which is kind of crazy, logic-wise, in reality, but we're not talking about reality. We're talking about a fucked-up writer's mind, right? Logic-wise, in trying to hammer that point down as to who this manic pixie dream girl is and what it really means to that man, because the only reason we ever talk about a manic pixie dream girl is in relation to the man who is with that girl. If it was with someone else, she'd just be a regular relationship or a fucked up relationship. But with this guy, this usually an introvert, a guy who doesn't want to be jumping up and down and going all over the place, he finds this one girl who pushes him to be more active, to be a better person. We kind of call that the manic pixie dream girl. And so that scene where he then pushes her, it's kind of great. I loved it for that. It was the great third act twist that this movie needed. And then even better to fuel into how it inspired his writing, into writing the novel that we end the movie with. I adored this movie. I mean, as I'm saying, it's basically, in my mind, a deconstruction of the manic pixie dream girl genre, subgenre of movies, if we can ever talk about it like that. And now, I really want to hear how Damien considers this.
Before Damien talks, I want to say something.
Sure.
I really like this movie, Andrew. I really do. And I think there's a lot more to this film than what I saw. What you see the first time, I think there's, you know,
layers.
It's like an onion. Thank you. I was about to say exactly that. But so it's like an onion. But the truth of the matter is, right, when I said it jumped the shark, I definitely, while I was watching that scene, thought exactly that. I was like, oh, okay, this movie just died a horrible death. And then while it was happening, I kind of realized, it took me a while, but I kind of saw that I think it's the smartest thing I've seen in a movie for a long time. Something kind of that reminds me a little bit of what's that movie with Meryl Streep about orchids? Adaptation. Right. It kind of reminded me of that movie, because that movie was great on so many levels. It worked as just an entertaining movie without even worrying about the subtext. But the thing about Adaptation was that if you paid attention, right, and I can't take credit for this. Somebody had to tell me this, and then I rewatched the movie and I was like, shit, he's right. If you notice, depending on which of the twins are active in the movie at a specific point, the story itself gets more or less exciting and more or less like an action movie. And I thought that was perfect. It's kind of like that in this movie. In the first pretty much half of the movie, this girl is the perfect girl, a real person, and, you know, is essentially, let's call her the Zooey Deschanel of this movie, right?
I wasn't going to use that name on purpose.
But it's kind of what she is. Anyway, and so that is when Paul Dano is actively writing with like all his heart and putting everything into this book or this exercise and paying attention to every detail and mapping out who this girl is, right? And then now she gets to a point where she's not quite there yet, but it's clear she no longer wants to be with him. And he says, no, that shit can't happen. And so instead of paying attention and writing, like, you know, mapping out again how this girl is, he just writes one line: she misses me, she wants to come back. And he keeps doing that. He keeps writing one-liners just to kind of be like, fuck, she's off track, she needs to be a better girlfriend. And it's like the thought process behind what he is doing is so just not present, non-existent. And the work that he puts in and the detail that he puts into this kind of corrective writing just isn't there, so much so that it's reflected in how his creation reacts to essentially his commands. You know? That when he puts these very vague, very just, I want her to get back in line kind of comments, she's like, all right, I'll do that, but I will do that with about as much thought and reality as you put into what you just did. You know, and that is why essentially that part of the movie is kind of jumping the shark. And I think while, you know, on a kind of surface level, it might be a bit much, on a deeper level, that section of the movie is almost genius.
It Jordan is.
Doesn't like that word. Do you agree, Andrew?
I agree so much. So, Damien, have you been defeated?
All right. So, what I want to do, in order for me to, of course, talk about this film and give you guys my point of view, I'm going to have to talk about the end of the movie. So, what I'll do...
Some broad strokes?
No. Broad strokes. I'm already down 2-1. So, doesn't matter. What I'll do is... I'm going to call up spoilers for people like Andrew. And so if you haven't seen this movie, take what these two have said and decide whether or not you want to watch it. If it sounds like something you like, Frank. For the people who do watch it and don't agree with them, I'm going to posit some reasons why you did not.
And remember, Damien, yes, this movie doesn't star Zooey Deschanel.
Okay, fine. So the acting is not one of the reasons I didn't like it. I did like Antonio Banderas' beard.
Oh, that was such a surprise, though.
That beard is gorgeous. Right. So the movie that you guys saw is great. I wish to God that I had seen that movie. You guys didn't bring up, well, you kind of loosely talked about what happened in the end, but you didn't talk specifics, obviously, because...
Right, we didn't want to spoil it, but since you're doing it, let's go.
So, what I want to know now is, how did you guys feel about the ending of the movie?
Are you talking about the fact that he meets the real Ruby, or... Or are you talking about the scene in which Ruby finds out?
Anything. Well, hold on.
Right.
Hold on. It depends on how you look on it, Andrew. Right. Because you could decide that that's the real Ruby. Mm-hmm. I actually am of a different view.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure Damien is of the same view as well.
Okay.
I have a bit of... I kind of think that it's the same creation, but there's some convenient... amnesia going on, and I'm pretty sure Damien is of the same view. Damien's just like, fuck you. I never want to hear from you again. I kind of think it's his creation, because if you look in those last lines that he said, he wrote something along the lines of, and after Ruby left, she was free, she was no longer Calvin's creation. And if she's no longer Calvin's creation...
Actually, if I remember correctly, he said she's no longer Calvin's.
He said Calvin's creation.
Creation was there.
Yeah.
Douglas is actually,
So, if she's no longer Calvin's creation, right? She could still remember everything and be like, you know what, fuck you, I'm going to do whatever I want to do, which is what he intended, clearly, right? But there's also an argument that could be made for the only way for her to start with a clean slate is to literally become a clean slate. So perhaps that is actually her, just her without the memories of him.
Yeah, because the dog remembered her.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that is what you think. Andrew, give us your theory, please.
As far as I'm concerned, that's a real girl which looks like Ruby.
And the dog just happened to remember her.
The dog just liked her, just like the dog just happened to like Ruby from the dream. That's what I decided to believe. I never even considered the thought that this was the creation again.
Right, and both of you still enjoyed the ending.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the ending? Was the ending a source of hope, source of joy, happiness, stuff like that, right?
There was source of hope, of course. That's what was intended. Right. I admit it was a bit convenient.
Right.
But I was still on board. It's, you know, honestly, if your movie is good enough, right, to get me to actually pull my heartstrings, because they don't pull very easy, right? But they do on occasion.
I wasn't even aware they were there.
Exactly. If you do actually pull them, I will be down for any positive ending. Any mushy, like, ridiculously stupid, like, hopeful ending for a love that has gone bad to go good. I will be down.
Okay.
All right? So that's what happened here. I know I can't justify it, but
I don't actually want you to justify the ending, because they leave it open ending for a reason.
Yeah.
They didn't give an explanation. It's just a girl that looks awfully like the last girl.
Right.
And the dog loves her. Right.
Yes. But and clearly she doesn't know who he is. Right.
Doesn't know who he is.
Yeah.
Fine. They do that so that, you know, you can Optimist can go, well, he finds true love in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's the same girl, you guys still came up with it. And pessimists like myself can go, this is complete bullshit. But that's fine.
This feels very reminiscent of us talking about Take Shelter last year.
but the thing about the ending is you guys had different endings but still enjoyed the movie. So it's not as if the ending made you guys like more or dislike more the movie. That's the same way with me. It's not like the ending changed how I felt about the movie. Like that ended when, oh well, no, all of this shit is bullshit. It's not the very end of the movie where I had a problem with it. The movie was okay up until she became an actual person. By that I mean when reality started setting in. That's the point where she started. She being that person started to be in conflict with him being this stay at home, shut in, and her being this kind of reckless person, right? Up until that point, I was completely on board with the movie. What happened beyond that point is where the movie kind of fell to pieces for me. And it's not the whole him starting to write, because that happened a little bit afterwards. Because it was clear that the relationship was failing even before he started.
Oh, of course. Right, yeah.
Right. So she decided, you know, that she was going to start going out, and he stayed home. She wanted she was going to spend one night a week in her apartment. Now, guys, I don't know if you remember how she is a figment of his imagination. I don't like to bring logic into the movie because
of course there's magic. I mean, I had the same concern, mm-hmm. but you don't, seeing as I enjoyed the movie, I kind of put it under the rug.
Right. So that was essentially the first red flag. And then for the rest of the movie, it was essentially a series of red flags straight to the end. So that is where. But what I'll say is the point where he lets her know that he wrote her,
mm-hmm.
that was the turning point in the movie. If they had done what I wanted, now mind you, what I wanted is really weird and probably extremely specific. When they had that point and he was essentially showing her the extent of his control, what I want is for, because she wrote the movie, I want her to write a horror story beyond that point. He has just proven proven that he is her overlord and he has full control. That would probably be one of the scariest movies.
It would be.
In years, if they went down that road. If they just showed you
crazy. You see, that's the thing though. To make that movie, they'd have to go back. Right. That would have had to have happened about 5 to 10 minutes after she existed.
Right. Yeah. No, to make a proper horror movie. But what I'm saying is, they could have ended the movie going down that road.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you a sense of, you know, the reason he is by himself. The reason, because he even met his ex-girlfriend and she said, which is why she's like, the only person you can be with is yourself.
Yeah, right? And that's another kind of hit or, you know, it's a nudge to the fact that even though this woman is a perfect woman, this woman is great, this woman really is himself.
Right.
You know?
And he can, and I was saying, all right, she realizes and they're telling you that he can only be with himself. And if that is the case, then when he turns on her, it would prove that not only can he not control this woman, but he's this way because he's not a fan of himself. And they said that, you know, he doesn't want to be called a genius. So if they had gone down this dark road, and he had exerted full power over this girl, towards darker means, he would have proven that, you know, he really doesn't like himself, and this is just another way for him to, you know, kind of find a way to give himself a free pass. You know, he's doing this not for himself, but he's doing it for her. But that didn't happen. That is what I wish. That would have completely changed my feelings on this movie. I'm not saying that they should have done this, right? I would have loved it if they did. And that would have given this movie the 10 out of 10 that you guys are seeing. But after the point where she finds an apartment, right? That was the first flag. After that, I don't know if you guys remember that or paid attention because you were busy swimming in love on this movie.
No, yeah, no, Damien.
No, hold on.
Sorry.
She found additional friends
that can be explained away because she started a class.
Right. When did she start the class?
She said she was going to when she was going one night a week mm-hmm. to her place.
Right. So she's found friends, and then he decided, all right, I need to rectify all of this. Now, Douglas, for the entire movie, they said, this man is a genius. He's been writing forever, and he's brilliant at it.
Mm-hmm.
He chose to adjust her behavior how a 2-year-old child would adjust her behavior. He decided to go. She misses him, must come home. No, I'm not a writer, Douglas. There's no way I'd have written that. You're not a writer. That seems incongruous with
the person you have to remember, though, at this point, he's supposedly desperate.
Desperate and lonely. Yeah. Fine. Okay. he was desperate and lonely at the start of the movie. He was desperate and lonely.
Lonely, not desperate. Fine.
Well, the brother made him seem desperate. He came up with this girl, so he knows everything. He knows all the parameters. He knows, essentially, the game. He's created the game. To adjust the game, he's decided to, I guess, take a shortcut. He wants her back. He sees her pulling away. So he writes, she misses me. I must come home. Which no writer on earth would have wrote that. So that is a second red flag. But I give them that. I went, all right, fine. Let's see what happens as a result. Now, she was the shell all this time, right? Every time he wrote something, she just kind of reactive. It was the push-pull, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she was essentially a shell of a person. Up until the party, the night of the party, because he was still just making small adjustments, broad strokes, but small adjustments. The night of the party is when she started going outside of everything that all of the little adjustments. She was no longer a shell when she went to that party. Why? What did he write the night before that changed her from the shell of a person to this, back to this normal human being?
I can't remember when the party was, but I remember there was a point where he wrote something like, she wasn't happy, she wasn't sad, she was just her.
Right.
Essentially trying to bring her back into
the she wasn't happy, person. She wasn't sad. Right. And then they had a few arguments, right? Then he went to this party, and remember, you know, she was going to leave him beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
He made all these adjustments, and then he went, not happy, not sad. She was just
herself, and could do was whatever she was whenever.
What
she
was the herself that he wrote? The manic pixie, right?
The original.
And then he made these adjustments. And then he went, reset.
Yeah, essentially.
But she reset to the person that was leaving.
Yeah.
Why? If you hit a reset button, Douglas.
I read that as reset to where she was at that point.
But that is clearly not what he wanted. That is not what
Is what he... All right, hold on. It's not what he wanted in the sense that he didn't want her to leave him.
Right.
But it's what he wanted in the sense that He didn't want this shell of a person.
Right? Yeah. But what I'm saying, Douglas, is if every time he made an adjustment, she changed drastically.
Mm-hmm.
When you write, not happy, not sad, just herself, the herself that we know is the girl in the beginning.
Right? All right, Damien, I hear where you're coming from. But this seems like a very particular, very specific, and very granular nitpick. It sounds like something that really should not make you not like this movie.
No, but that is what I'm saying. Douglas, it's not just... That is what I'm saying. It's not just this. It is not just one thing that turned me off the movie. It is all these little things that added up to the end, and the end was bad. You guys might read whatever you want to read into it, but he wrote this book, and then magically the girl came back. That is, I mean, nothing. We don't know anything that has changed about him as a person, but the girl came back. She's new, she doesn't remember anything. So how is it that he set her free and this new girl came back? Why, when he was making adjustments to her, why is it that when he hit reset, she reset to the girl that didn't love him? That is the part that I didn't understand. He made changes and there was clear effects to those changes. Then he wanted to undo all those changes. And she went back to the person who was going to leave him.
So, all right. Let me attempt to answer some of these questions.
Right.
Number one, How does she magically have an apartment?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm going to read into that when it came up in the movie as before he went, this is before he went and made any adjustments. He had already written, like, I don't know, let's consider it a 500-page book, creating this wonderful girl, and then she appeared, right?
Right.
Within that 500-page book, there's so much details that things are always willing to come out. When this creation happens, I don't know if this is how you viewed the film, but we are, even though the movie presents this as a woman who appeared into reality, we are in this guy's mind, right? He is seeing all of this. He is seeing his brother see this creation. It didn't happen, right? So the apartment is just as much as a creation as the manic pixie dream girl of Ruby.
Wait, sorry, did you just say that this whole movie didn't happen?
I'm saying between him putting down the 500 pages and him starting to write the real book didn't happen.
Okay, I'm saying that the movie you saw is horrible.
If that is the movie, if that is the explanation you have, this is a far worse movie than I ever thought.
Yes, agreed, Damien, agreed.
Because then all of the shit that happened in that movie, it makes even less sense than it makes at present. You're essentially saying that the doctor gave him the assignment. He went home. He's a lunatic. And then he dreamt up all of this. And now has gone back to write this real book. But then there's still the end of the movie to consider, Andrew. Is he dreaming that part up too? So the only reality is when he went to the doctor and when he's giving the speech about the brand new book that he wrote. That is the only two times we enter reality? Is that what he's saying?
There are one of two ways to look at it. It's that, or it's a Fight Club scenario. And I hate to use that example. I hate to use that as the excuse. Where he's just seeing madness as he's in the real world.
Right, and all the other people that interact with her are... That is just his imagination?
So when we're watching Fight Club and we see Edward Norton talk about how the fat guy interacts with Brad Pitt, even though Edward Norton is on the other side of the room...
So he's naked in the pool with the... Is that what... No. So he's the standing... For her, in these conversations, that means
he is imagining the girl as much as he is imagining the people interact with the girl.
So, all of the movie, with the exception of the start and a tiny bit of the end, is his imagination.
Correct.
This is the worst fucking one time.
But herein lies the thing, right? All of that is in service to his progression into getting an understanding of women, right? Because even when we start out in the movie and his brother, played by Chris Messina, reads what he's been writing for the first time, which is the book on Ruby, his response is immediately like, it's a funny story, but you don't understand women. Right. To which he then goes on this journey to having this relationship with this woman, and it kind of teaches him that very thing I was talking about in the beginning, which was that we think these women are here to better us, but it's something more than that.
So this is funny.
The sections
I'm reading Wikipedia, mm-hmm. and it says here that Kazan rejects the description of Ruby Sparks as a manic pixie dream girl, calling it reductive and diminutive.
So the sections where the brother is finding underwear and stuff like that is in his imagination as well.
I don't know. I didn't really think about.
But Andrew, if you're positing this as a theory, then you have to know.
No, no. That part, it could be either or. It could be he's imagining this happening right now, or it could be he actually got underwear and put there, and he just doesn't remember. That's either or, but that's not the point, okay, is it?
So, alright, so the entire... I'm trying to look at it from your perspective. 90% of this movie is a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, I guess it makes sense then. Because then, anything that doesn't make sense in the movie, any logical... illogical things, anything that... you know, seems out of place. You can just explain away by, well, all of this lunacy is inside of his mind. So, you're just getting what he thinks is happening. I guess that can make some sense. I don't really... But then the ending just makes everything doubly confusing.
How does that make it doubly confusing?
No, because... is it that he's met this girl in reality, or is it that he's now, even after coming through that experience and writing the book about her, why would he then need Ruby Sparks again? Why would he need her again?
Well, listen, herein comes your perspective, the pessimist optimist perspective of it, which is what you brought up earlier. I mean, I believe honestly that at that point we're in reality and he just happens upon a girl, which is why he has that look on his face of how is it, am I alive, like what's going on. And at that point we're filled with this hopeful idea that now that he's gone through this journey of learning, as I said, to redefine his understanding of women, that this could actually have a happy ending. This could blossom into a good relationship as opposed to what we saw before. Or you could have the pessimist view, which is that he is now gone back into his dreamland to Ruby, and it's going to become a dark, dark spiral of him going crazy.
Alright. So, Andrew's argument to mine is that it's all in a dream. Douglas, do you have any arguments to counter what I have said? I know you say it's nitpicky, but this is a series of nitpicks. Is there anything that you...
No, I mean,
apart from
saying
that I'm being overly reductive.
No. No, it's clear that the reasons you don't like the movie are very deep set in logic and making sense. And
I'd prefer it if movies do that.
Yeah, exactly. And when you're watching a movie,
I will point back to the theory,
creates a woman out of his mind, you kind of have to go with it. And if you're not willing to go with it, then sure, it makes sense that you don't like the movie, you know?
I was up to a point. And then some of the decisions. Definitely the one line changes to her personality is just not a thing that I think that a writer would do. I have met many writers.
So, but hold on. So, you as a writer, mm-hmm. let's say you are the greatest writer in the world, right? Let's put you in a situation where you're boiling eye water. There is a river flowing from your eyes. And while the river is flowing, are you really thinking about what is the correct adjective to describe her longing for you? Is it that she's longing in the Greek sense of the term, or the, you wouldn't really be in that, but I'm not even going to argue
once
that, right?
No, Douglas, uh-huh. Once, yes, I'm on your side.
Mm-hmm.
The first time he does it,
mm-hmm.
right, the one line adjustment, he's sad, he's distraught, he has to get this woman back, he knows he has the power. And he utilizes some of that for Ruby's sad. Ruby must come back. Fine. This is the first one. Every other time, Douglas. Remember, Douglas. He is a genius writer. And he does... The one time, this is fine. I was on board the first time. It's not that much. Like, yeah, if I am desperate and I have the power, my girl come back. Simple. The subsequent times, though, seem really out of character. You wouldn't write this 500-page dossier on this person.
Well, no. And then remember that the 500-page dossier... Well, I don't really want to argue this point because... You know, I don't think it's really going to change anything. But the 500-page dossier was written before she was real.
Right. No, that she's up.
And that's the thing, right? That in lies why I kind of forgive the one lines. Because the 500-page dossier was before she was real. And that was when he was purposefully writing. Because he was writing for more than just effect. He was writing for actual expression. When he's going to do those changes, he already made the decision, which he told us many times ago, that he is not writing that book anymore. At this point, he is just making those, as you put it, tweaks. And there, he's not going to put in the 5-page expression to stay exactly how she wants her to feel. He wants her to feel so that she will be back, be happy, be the girl who she was during the first few months, and never change from that state.
That sounds like a thing that a writer would do, though.
No, but I kind of view it as he chooses when to be a writer, as in an expressive novel writer, and as opposed to someone who is just using that power. He's been given this power, so it's kind of
not to cut you, but do you remember when he was talking to the shrink and he said, I'm just writing to spend more time with her, right? He can't stop writing about her because all he wants to do is spend more time with this person, right? The first time he made the adjustment, he was desperate. Why would the subsequent adjustments, wouldn't he have spent so... Because he saw the negative thing that happened the first adjustment he made. Why wouldn't he spend the time and fix... He's not doing anything else. Why wouldn't he fix it?
You didn't even notice that wasn't right. There.
That was funny. That was hilarious. And another issue I have with the movie, though. Was this movie supposed to be funny?
I think it was supposed to be funny at times. Right. I don't think it was... So it's one of those.
It's not
movies.
A comedy.
It's not a comedy.
And it didn't become a drama until an hour and 15 minutes in, when she decided to be a real person. It was just this romp. Oh yeah, and they go to the shop, and the girl who wanted to sleep with him saw the ruby sparks, and she ran away, and he threw her over her shoulder. It was funny things that were supposed to be happening. Then they went off to the family get together. He became the worst person in the world, and she decided that she didn't like him anymore, and all of that is fine. But then there's just so many things that, and I guess if I had looked at it Andrew's way, where this is all a dream, then I would have excused it but that is not what I saw it as.
Yeah, I saw it as reality.
Right.
I didn't,
somehow,
I didn't think it was a dream.
He magically was able to do this.
I'd be very upset with
the
this
brother,
movie if that was a dream.
Right, because then when the brother came, I was like, for all men everywhere. For Christ's sake. Do not fuck this up.
So the question is, Damien, right? Mm-hmm. The question I have to you is, yes. You have created your manic pixie dream girl.
Yes.
And you have your power. What adjustments would you make?
Holy shit.
Or are you not willing to admit that?
This is the very end part where he was exerting his power to her face. That would be the entire relationship.
Really? You don't want me to do this? Hold on. Sorry, what?
You don't like what?
The first line in Damien's book would be, she can never touch this keyboard.
No, first of all, he built a real person. That is the first mistake he made. Mine would be like a page long with just essentially stats. Tolerance to Damien's arms out 100%.
Loves Rambo first blood.
Loves Rambo 100%. Speaks to Andrew and Douglas 0%.
Oh,
are you crazy? I don't want her talking. In fact, she wouldn't even have language. Right? No language.
Right?
And then put in dimensions and continually adjust those dimensions depending on the sexual position I want that night. Breast too big, can't fall in half, I'll adjust these.
Damien, I think someone needs to have a talk with you about women.
It would be terrible. Actually, the only person here that can speak about women would be Douglas. As me and you are both, how should I say this? Lonely bastards is the term. Without girlfriend, sans girlfriend, I think. Was it? Yes. Look, the movie, part of it too is that I kind of expected some kind of comedy out of this movie, and
yeah, it didn't quite get.
Really
it.
Wasn't that?
Yeah.
And then when they went to the dark place, I wanted more of that. And they didn't give me that. And then logical inconsistencies, for me, kind of made, is what made this movie not work for me. Andrew seeing it as a dream, I honestly cannot understand how Andrew has come to that conclusion. It makes the movie worse for me. And I guess the next time I watch this movie, because I'm definitely going to watch it again, both to see if I can punch a giant hole into Andrew's theory, which will be difficult, because whenever you say it's all in somebody's mind, you kind of hard to attack them.
You excuse about everything at that point.
But to see if I could see it how Douglas saw it, which is, you know, this very technical deconstruction of this, not only this woman, but this relationship. I still don't think anything is going to make me like that ending. But that is me personally. I don't think that ending works, whether you think it is a dream.
The ending, you see, I agree. The ending technically is a little weak, but right. I was already on board.
Right.
And so it just kind of... use that.
Right.
It was able to manipulate my emotions.
Right. If yeah. I'm able to look past all the things, which will be easier now, because I'll just go, that's fine, let's give that a pass and give Alders a pass. He's desperate, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'll be able to get to the end of the movie and go, well, I guess I can see what these guys saw. I won't see what Andrew see.
No,
I'm
not.
I'm 100%
please,
sure.
Please don't see that.
I'm not going
because
to see
because without Andrew what Andrew sees right now, for me, this is a contender for the top 10.
Okay, this is not even...
This is a contender.
Right.
I won't tell you it's actually going to be there, but...
What I will say, though, is that the movie... While I don't like the movie is not bad. Mm-hmm. It's not one of those where I can look at it and go, I know you guys like it. This is a flaming pile of shit. It is not that.
So it's not the Bourne legacy is what you're saying.
Right. I'm going to punch you in the face the next time I see you.
Which is actually very soon.
Yeah, which is actually very soon. So I don't. Which is why, before we got into spoilers, I said, just take what you guys thought about the movie. Because I'm fairly certain most people will feel about the movie what you guys felt about the movie, because it even has a pretty high rating on IMDb. I think it's 7.8,
yeah,
something really high,
and it's like a 79 on Rotten Tomatoes,
right,
too.
So I know that there's people who like the movie, but I just found too many things wrong with the movie. It is not Prometheus level to where I loathe the movie and everything it stands for, because it is nowhere near that bad. But I still think that there's some significant problems with the movie, and I don't like to say, you know, logically it didn't make sense, because of course he created this girl out of thin air. I remember when people were talking about Watchmen when it came out, they're like, once somebody's on board with something, it is unfair to the audience to keep asking them to, you know, take more leaps, right? Which is why they took out the whole squid thing at the end of Watchmen. They're like, guys, if we put a giant squid destroy New York at the end of this, two people are going to like this movie, because we'd have asked too much of the audience, for Christ's sake. And I think for me, that was what happened. They kind of asked too much. I was on board, fine, you made up this girl, that sounds pretty awesome, we can do fun things with this. And then they just kept going and going. So what? Okay, you guys are wrong, but especially Andrew. Holy shit, is Andrew wrong? I don't know how he had that plan and ended up where you are.
I don't know either. And Andrew sounds like he likes it more than me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Well, if his reason is it's all a dream, it's kind of hard to argue with that. Your dog Inception is the best. Why? It's all a dream. Within a dream, within another dream. Is this what the end of Inception is, Andrew? The start of this movie? He just wakes up. I'm a writer.
Is Paul Dano in that one again? I can't remember. He isn't. No, he's
no, not. I think we've done this for too long since we started talking about Paul Dano in Inception.
I don't know why. But
Rust
I
and Bone will be more straightforward. Man, I won't have to argue with anybody about. I wonder if it's a dream that she lost her legs. Simple bastards. Andrew, that is a really dumb theory that you've come up with. Alright. I am going to
I'd like to remind you that Bourne Legacy is a flaming pile of crap.
You are so wrong. It is kind of unbelievable. So wrong. And
but anyways,
another Bourne. So
clearly, but anyways,
the people have spoken.
Ruby Sparks has gotten a 2-1 vote, which makes it Trump approved.
Yep.
Oh, is that all we need to get approval here?
What else are we going to do? We can't do unanimous because I have this lunatic.
This is true. Right? but there should there should be two members that are preferred members, I would think.
That is true. But every now and again we have to. It's still his podcast.
Okay.
And he did you know that he did a Twilight podcast with was it Jenny Amato? Was it her? Right.
Andrew.
Yes.
A what podcast?
A Twilight.
What
podcast? It is being hosted on our site.
No, Andrew. Take that shit off immediately. Right.
He didn't even fling it somewhere where regular people would be able to see it.
I updated my podcast thing in a few weeks because I didn't update it at all while I was on vacation, and I just haven't had the time to do it yet. But no, Andrew, if when I update my podcast app and I see a Twilight episode in my Tom feed, I'm going to kill somebody.
I went to the
site. And remember, I see you very soon.
I went to the website and I saw the podcast on the site and I went, that is really disappointing. I cannot believe Andrew conned some woman out of her heart, her earned time, to talk about friggin' Twilight. But then in the RSS feed, it says Super Troopers. Why?
We really should end this podcast.
I almost thought about deleting the feed when I saw that.
Do you guys realize that we've gone almost 3 hours?
Yes, I realize.
Which makes this an editing nightmare for me.
That is awesome.
That sounds so sad for Andrew.
And that is after I cut off the 20 minutes of us doing foolishness. So this is 3 hours of actual podcast.
Three solid hours of nonsense. We did talk about that movie for about an hour.
What is that? It's a good ass movie. And the more I talk about it, the more I love this movie.
The more I think about what Andrew has said, the more I hate this movie.
That's because Andrew, what is wrong with you? Why would you even bring such a lame brain theory onto this podcast?
Oh, dog, he disprove it. All of it.
Disprove it.
No, but you can't. You can say that for any movie that was ever made, and you can't disprove it.
Hold on.
You know that, right, Hold Andrew? On.
Is that how science works now? I'm not clear about how this works. Is that how science works now? Someone says some ridiculous shit and it is now my job. What you should do is prove it. Prove your harsh shit. That's what you should do.
Okay,
come back
all right.
Next week with an explanation as to why what you said made any sense.
Alright, so Damien, prove how he created a woman into reality and other people see her.
Because we saw that on the screen.
Yeah, I saw that on the screen. I saw that on the
prove
screen.
Prove that what we saw on the screen wasn't true. Or wasn't.
No, you're jumping on
this. Yeah, goddamn it, I am. You see what you've done, Andrew?
You know what? Thank you all. Damien, I know you're listening to this about 6 days in the future. When you hear this, I want you to remember that you are right. Future Damien, do not shut off the podcast. Hello, this is the end of the podcast. I don't know how you'll hear
you this. Probably have shut
but
off.
But don't immediately shut off the podcast because these two lunatics disagree with you. Which you've been known to do at work. It's a bad practice. Like I've heard this nonsense once, I probably shouldn't listen to this again. But for everybody else that have been listening to this, I'd like to thank you all. You could have been doing productive things, but you, like myself, don't have much sense and have been listening to three lunatics talk about things they have barely any understanding of. You can find Andrew's writing on G-Man Reviews, starting
including a Twilight podcast.
Including a Twilight podcast. Starting 2013, you'll be able to find my writings on G-Man Reviews. Douglas will never write ever again unless it is an expense report. And again, Douglas prostitutes cannot be expensed to your company. No one is that good.
I am that good.
You can find us all on Twitter. You can find us all on Google+. You can't find me on Facebook, but these two lunatics should be easy to find. It's G-Man Reviews on pretty much everything. And DJ Arlaus's name for Douglas. I am Damien White. If you search Damien White, you should find me. Thank you for listening.
I'm hearing voices, hearing voices, the tremble of cool, the feminine of this generation, my threshold.